Hey everybody, Jeff Dunham. So, you may know me as a ventriloquist. That's the only thing I've really ever done my entire life. I was 8 years old and I saw a ventriloquist on television when I was in the third grade. His name was Edgar Bergen. Edgar Bergen and his dummies Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Stern were very famous at that time, but they were more famous when their career first started on radio in the 30s. Bergen was basically the Seinfeld of the radio era. He had a number one radio show for almost 10 years. Charlie was every bit as popular at that time as Mickey Mouse. But the most fascinating and ridiculous part of all this was, Bergen was a ventriloquist on the radio. You couldn't see him, but you could hear him. It made no sense, but it did make sense because Bergen was so good at comedy and bringing his characters to life, and the guest stars that they had on the show made the show just unbelievably popular in the United States. Everybody would sit down in front of their radios on Sunday nights and listen to Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. But radio is what made that all start, and Bergen didn't get on television until years later in the 50s when television pretty much took the place of radio. And one of the most popular radio manufacturing companies at the time was Philco. Philco started in the 20s making batteries. But then Philco started manufacturing radios, and almost every household in the country had some sort of radio that people would sit down as a family and listen to. This particular radio right here was the most sought after and most popular Philco radio. It was the Model 90. It's called the Cathedral, and it is absolutely beautiful. And what powered these things were very rudimentary electronics, including tubes. This is a tube. They didn't have transistors back then. These things right here were what powered and crafted the signal for all of us to hear. And that is just an amazing piece of artwork right there with all these glass tubes and rudimentary electronics that still work if you can find the right guy to fix them. But what we're here for today is to unbox a television that was manufactured by Philco in 1958, and it's never been unboxed. The tape is still on the box that Philco put there the day that it was made. And as a collector, I can't wait to see if we can get this thing out of the box, plug it in, and get it working. But this is pretty rare. It's a Virgin TV, and we're gonna see how she does. But what's in the box? Well, in 1948, Philco started making televisions, and they had a great run for almost 10 years. Really big sales. But then their sales started to slump a little bit come the late 50s, and they decided to come out with an eclectic line of televisions. And this is one that I saw in a friend's storage unit, and it was called the Predicta. And I said, what is this? I know I've seen this thing in science fiction movies, and I became fascinated. So being a collector, I started, and I went down the rabbit hole, and it hasn't ended. And that's when I found the one that's in the box that we're about to see. But I want to show you a few of these televisions right now that made Philco go out of business eventually. This line lasted for 2 years, and I have a couple of friends here today who are gonna help me. These are basically my pimps.
I'm leaving that. We're using that.
Okay. So I'd like to welcome my friends that I've spent too much money with, Blake Hinkle and Dan Jones. Blake, good to see you. How are you?
Jeff.
Well, yeah. Dan, how are you?
Good.
All right. So Blake is the guy that's taken a lot of my money, and Dan is the guy that repairs the stuff that Blake sells me that doesn't work. Is that pretty much it?
Sums it up. Yeah,
pretty much it. So I wanted to just show a few of the models here, but Blake, what part of your life has been televisions? Most of it? I mean, you have so many. You know everything.
So in 2018, I went down an eBay rabbit hole looking for the TV that my grandmother had, and it just got out of control.
Right. And so, Dan, you're for a living, you do what?
I'm actually a mechanical engineer by day, but at night, down in the shop, I like restoring any old thing.
And your wife and your 10-year-old son, what do they think?
My son thinks it's cool. My wife's like, hey, it's keeping you out of the bar or doing something bad, so it can't be okay.
That's exactly it. Yeah. All right. And this thing that we have in the box that we're eventually going to get out, you guys drove this thing across the country just to bring it here to do this video so we could take it out of the box and see if it works. And Dan is here to help make it work if it doesn't. But you have heard of these things being in the boxes that people find in storage units and attics or whatever, and they take them out, and every once in a while they do work straight out of the box, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know a fellow collector that's got one that's got all the original parts in it, and he plugged it in, tried it out, and it works just fine.
But we'd be really lucky if that happened, right?
I'd say it's, well, I mean, it's a 50-50 chance.
Okay, let's show everybody first. I want to show them what we're talking about. So this is how popular these TVs were. This, basically, this snow globe was from Toy Story 2 when Al, the toy guy, had one as his regular TV, right?
Yeah, to watch Woody's Roundup on.
And basically, this television is what we're going to be getting out of the box, right?
Yeah.
So this is called the...
Holiday.
All right, so hopefully it's in good shape, and hopefully there haven't been rats and mice and all that inside the box, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this, again, isn't a good example of what the television actually looks like, because back then, one of the big things they did was they made a very, at that time, thin screen, right?
Yeah, that was the big thing, was that they were trying to shrink the picture tube to give it more of a theater view.
Right.
And so that was the big pioneering of the technology for the Predicta.
Okay, what people don't know is televisions back then were the centerpiece of the living room, of the family room. It was a piece of furniture. Back then they were these beautiful wood cabinets, and the cabinetry was part of manufacturing the televisions, right?
But the problem is that cabinet was big.
Right.
Because the picture tubes were very deep. They were trying to, you know, make the cabinet slimmer, shallower.
Right.
So it wasn't taking up so much space.
Well, let's turn one of the televisions in, and Blake, this is your favorite Philco television, right?
Yeah. This is the Predicta full dress model.
Why is it called full dress?
So it has a fully finished back. It was actually advertised as a room divider television. You could move it, utilize it as a room divider, or you swivel it from one room to the other.
And this has the fake wood grain.
Photo finish.
Photo finish. So this is a picture of wood that they make into this razor thin applique that they put over the what? What was it? Plywood?
Yeah.
Yeah, it may sonate from the back, but
Masonite. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Did this model sell really well for him?
So there's not a ton of surviving sales data, but this one is one of the more rare models to find, making me believe that they didn't sell as many as the other models.
Right.
It was one of the most expensive Predictas they had for sale. It had what they called wraparound sound, which was an early attempt at stereo surround sound. And it also had the pop-up tuning, and you would change your channel just by manually walking up to the set and changing how you wanted it, set the volume, set the contrast, all the different settings.
Was Philco one of the manufacturers that was trying to be different and really trying to be on the cutting edge of technology? And
yeah, so one of the things about the Predicta is, and part of the charm of the Predicta is that it was almost bleeding edge, is what I say, but leading edge just in the sense that they manufactured and used printed circuit boards, which most TVs at the time were hand wired. As well as they manufactured a new picture tube that was much thinner, like we mentioned before, and it allowed the TV itself to be thinner and smaller in footprint. But it also, with that, it brought its own set of problems. The TV itself had heating issues, which caused them to have a ton of warranty claims, as well as the picture tubes, because it was new technology. It allowed them to die off quick.
Well, let's show them a couple other things here as we go. Just go backwards here. And Dan, as a matter of fact, you refurbished this one.
Yep.
Right? And it was just a hunk of junk. But what I love about these are clock radios. What clock radio? Well, they basically took a clock and put it on top of a tube radio. So you got a clock radio. But the great part was you could set this, and in the morning when you set the radio, it would turn on at a certain time. But what's really funny to me about this is not solid state. It was tubes. So you hear it go click, and then it takes about 20 or 30 seconds before the radio actually comes on, because the tubes have to literally warm up, turn red and start glowing, and So I think this is just great. And this was a big deal for them. They loved being able to let people turn the faces of whatever thing they had.
It was called the Predicta Radio because it emulated the Predicta screen floating above the chassis.
Pretty cool. And this was the 17er, which was incredibly successful for them, right?
Yeah, that was actually the one product that stood out when they made the Predicta. They had blockbuster sales for that TV because of reliability and size.
Reliability and size. It was portable. It didn't have batteries, but you could have a handle on it. You could twist. What was this called?
The Scantenna.
Scantenna, yeah. So they would go down like this, and pretty great. We'd go inside there. All right, that's amazingly fun. Super. And by the way, this one does work really, really well. All right, so let's go down and show everybody what a Predicta actually looks like. We might as well start with the bottom of the line, the introductory. And this was called the debutante. But let's show the basics of a Predicta. So you've got the floating TV up here. They call it floating, meaning just because it's above. And you could swivel it and point it in any direction in the room, right? And it had a cloth front. You change the channels over there. Some of the younger folks might not realize there's no cable. Everything was received through this antenna. You had to move your antenna around to get the best signal. You had to make sure the TV was in the right part of the house. It was a pain in the neck. And then you actually had to tune in the television station.
Or you had tinfoil on the...
You put tinfoil on it, yeah. Or if you had a console TV, usually you had it hooked up to an antenna that was on the roof of the house. And that thing had to function and be pointed the right way. It had to be pointed to the
Mose antenna rotor.
Oh yeah, it would turn. It would actually turn the antenna towards whatever antenna you needed to get the best signal. But again, so how much do you think this cost in 1958?
Brand new, this TV would have been $199.95. It would have came with a factory stand.
With a stand. So in today's money, we looked that up earlier, it's almost $2,100, right?
Yep.
That's not cheap.
No.
Yeah. That's pretty great. And okay, so moving up from the debutante, we come over here to the Princess. And I guess what made the Princess a little bit nicer than the debutante was it had the stamped metal front. Did this light up?
It does, but just the flashing and the fact that it has the arms as well. This model didn't have CRT arms.
Oh.
That came in a few other colors, too. Philco collectively referred to these three as the Decorator series.
Yes. A lot of these sets came in multiple colors. I believe this one came in three colors. This one would have came in two, and then, yeah.
And then, basically, these also ended up in motels, right?
Yes. So, in the early 60s, once Philco had their demise and merged with Ford, they had, from my understanding, a glut of overstock of these sets.
Right.
So, they made a deal with Holiday Inn, and Holiday Inn bought a ton and had them as one of their marquee items for their room. Come and see the Predicta in the room.
Wow. Watch a football game on this. Great. And the Siesta. The Siesta, I think this is actually, I know there's fancier, better ones, but I love this one because it has the feature that the clock did, and that is this thing could wake you up. You could set this clock down here, this is a clock, and the television would come on. Or it had the sleep timer where you could set it for 20 minutes or an hour or half an hour, and it would stay on and then turn itself off. And that was pretty advanced for back then.
Yeah, no. It was a new feature at the time.
And the amazing part is it was all mechanical. There were no electronics to do that. So that the clock feature was an actual clock with gears and levers, and that's how it would turn this thing on. It would actually turn an electrical switch on to make it work. Pretty great. And now, why don't we look at the really, really nice models. So what we're getting to now is closer to the top of the line, right?
As far as cost was concerned, it was definitely one of the more expensive Predictas.
Well, I love these two right here. These are the tandems, and that's the stereo tandem. Because it came with two other speakers, right? External speakers, and also you could get a turntable for it, so you could, or a record player, they call it a turntable back then, so you could listen to the stereo records using the same unit right here. The outstanding feature of the tandem, and the reason it's called the tandem, is because it was the first remote TV. In the advertisement, they show how you could put this next to your Lazy Boy chair or whatever, your sofa, and then you could pick this up and carry it across the room and put it anywhere up to 25 feet away. And the television, the commercial back then, shows the dainty housewife picking this thing up and walking it across the room. The trouble is it weighs about, what, 60 pounds?
Everybody feels like it.
So they must have had it on wires or something. Right?
Yeah.
Or an empty shell with a fake picture in it. But it's got this giant cable that was 25 feet long, and you know, you had to make sure you didn't trip over.
The slogan was, keep the set beside your chair, put the picture anywhere.
Right.
So it was handy. You could reach down, fiddle with the channel, the volume. In the base of the CRT, there's actually a connector where you can connect an auxiliary speaker.
Oh, nobody told me that. That's great.
And a little satellite speaker you can plug in so you can still have the sound coming at you.
Instead of
from the screen.
Right next to you. Yeah. But, all right. That's smart.
From what I've read about them, they were more popular in public places like in bars or in lobbies where you wanted to have a TV for the public to be able to look at, but you didn't want people fiddling with the knobs or the volume.
So you got the head unit behind the bar and you got the CRT up there.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. You know, I just love, I love it. You know, some of the cars I have, I call them magnificent failures. And I love it because people have these great ideas that for some reason didn't catch on and they became failures. And that's what I feel like about the Predicta, because they were rushed. Like you said, the engineering wasn't great. They would overheat. The screens weren't good. Some of the parts weren't so great. So, you know, maintenance was a nightmare. And the other thing you said, Dan, is that a lot of guys hate these things because they're so difficult to work on.
Yeah. As they went, like the 17-inch models were made more with the technician in mind.
Right.
But these, they literally solder the circuit board directly to the chassis, and there's no cutouts under the chassis to get at anything. So if we need to change parts, you either need to snip them off and then solder onto the little stubs of the old part that's sticking up, or you have to undo all the wiring, unsolder the board, and it's a very lengthy process.
Dan's doing a great job. We told him not to get technical because people would be bored. Anyway, no, I was really good, Dan. Thank you very much for that. You too, Blake. You're doing fantastically. So now, let's show what are the most sought-after and rarest of the Predictas. And first, we have this one called the Pedestal. And what are the nicknames for it?
barber pole or gas pump.
The barber, that makes perfect sense. Great. But this is a freestanding, and again, this thing swivels just like all the other ones, but it's pretty darn great. I love that. And then the king of them all, right? The Continental. And also, the rocket ship?
Yeah, because it had the four fin-like legs.
And the Danish. Why the Danish?
Danish Modern is an AKA that collectors use for this TV. It's just because of the Danish-esque legs.
Okay, and those were made-up names by collectors.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. Well, these are just beautiful pieces. And again, we're going to try and get them all running by the end of the video. But what we have to do first is the reason you're here, the reason you guys drove all the way across the country. But before we get to what's in the box, I wanted to show everybody what hopefully is not in the box. This is out of the Siesta. I took this out of there and I started replacing tubes and all that. Then I ended up getting a different board. But this is a board, and you guys call it something different than the chassis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is the mess that is usually inside a Predictor, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. It's dirty. There's mouse droppings. There's wires that are chewed up.
Missing. Yeah. Stuff falling apart.
Yeah. Well, the smell that this sends off, too. I mean, you've got rat urine and all kinds of stuff. It's just pretty. Yeah.
Yeah. Cigarettes. Nicotine coating.
Nicotine, that's right.
Yeah. Some of the wire covers that they used back in the day, they would leach out.
Chemicals and
well, hopefully the one that's in the box is nothing like this. It'll be perfectly clean and work. Should we get to it?
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah. Before we get started, we have to look at the top of this box. This is just 50s magic right here. First of all, I don't know, use two men to handle. So one of us is going to be left out. And then the good part about this is we're actually not going to destroy this box. Because if you come over here and look at the instructions, man, we need to go by the instructions, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Do not open this end. Read instructions. All right. So we start from the bottom. To unpack, open other end and remove bottom packing. Bend out flaps on this open end and stand cabinet on its base. With the carton still on the cabinet with flaps out. Lift carton together with inner bar packing from the cabinet. Do not remove cabinet from packing, but as instructed above, remove packing from cabinet. I got it.
All right.
Yep, tip it down carefully. This is three men. I don't know what's happening.
No.
We're witnessing history.
I know. Look at that tape.
Can't believe we just cut through.
That's wild.
65-year-old tape. Take this flap, folds out. You guys know how this opens?
No.
No.
We've never opened one.
Quite sure. It seems like it's glued. Again, I'm trying not to destroy the box.
And miss and bend out flaps.
Okay. That's what we're...
Yeah, so it's glued.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Open it.
Between the flaps.
Yeah.
And this whole thing is glued. Ah. I made it.
Okay.
Do it. Idea. We're gonna get a knife, a big knife.
I'll be right back.
All right. It's searing, so we can saw through it.
When all else fails, get a bigger knife. I'm gonna keep my hand out of there.
You too.
So are we like paleontologists cutting into a dinosaur egg?
Thank you.
I'm just sawing the outer layer off.
You got a better view. It's kind of a launch. Wait, scoot back a little bit.
Yeah. Kids, don't try this at home.
There we go.
All right, I'm in.
Here's one flap.
There's two flaps. All right. All right. It said to do not remove this. So let's pick this up, flip that under. Now stand it up.
Up, get the foister.
I guess in the 2000s, it takes 3 men. All right, we ready? Hold on. Bend out flaps on open end and stand cabinet on its base. With the carton still on the cabinet with the flaps out, lift carton together with inner packing from the cabinet. Do not remove cabinet from packing, but as instructed above, comma, remove packing from cabinet. It take use 2 men to handle, but it needs women that know English to decipher what this says. Because this says the exact opposite of what the bottom says.
This is why men don't read the directions.
It's just to rip the damn thing open. Ready?
Let's go.
But I would make sure nothing falls over.
Okay.
Look at that.
All right, ready?
Look at that! It's beautiful! Right?
Doing the bet.
Look at that. There's no hazing in there at all. There's a little dot inside. It looks almost like mold. But let's lift it out. Oh, wait a minute. Look at this over here. All right. Who is the woman?
Phyllis.
Phyllis Philco. I got a warranty. The schematic in here. It's the preliminary schematic. What does that mean? Preliminary? This is like before we really settled on what it was going to be. Here's what it was supposed to look like.
Maybe that's where it stood at the time they produced it.
Seriously, preliminary. That's really funny.
They did make numerous changes to these, engineering changes, with every run. You go through the shop manual, say run number 2, we change this part to this value, or we added a part or deleted one.
That's really cool. I've never seen that. This folder contains operating instructions, registry card, guarantee certificate, and schematic diagram. But I still want to know who that is. 1958. There we go. TV today from the world of tomorrow.
Who was the Miss America that year? Philco sponsored the Miss America.
And the commercials that we're using in this video were from that pageant. Right, debuting the predicted to the public.
Correct.
Right. So far, so great. It's amazing. It looks really great. There's a little, a couple little mold spots in here is what it looks like to me, but not a big deal. I mean, it looks crystal clear.
And there's no evidence that, rodents got in here and chewed on anything or...
Yeah. Yeah, and again, this right here is always, when you see them, this is always the stuff to peel off this micro-thin photographic applique, right?
And the cool thing with this cabinet is you notice that on the front and back, part of it is perforated metal.
Oh, look at that. Wow, this is amazing. Let's clean it off and get it on the table and plug it in. Beautiful. Okay,
few quick television basics. You have to have a signal to get into the TV. In the old days, it was broadcast and it went through that antenna.
Oh,
you're the first person, Dan, to open that antenna since Lord knows when. They don't do broadcast signals analog anymore. They're all digital, so this TV will not work today, unless we made our own little television station, which we've all done before. You make a little TV station in your house with a little transmitter and your old TVs will work. We're not going to mess with that. So what we did was we took a DVD player and we hooked it up to a converter, which converts it into a signal that can then go, is a typical cable TV signal, an RF signal, that then goes into the converter on the back here, which then gives it a signal that it thinks is a broadcast signal. We also have what's called a variac. And what this does is, instead of plugging it into the wall, turning it on and having it zap all the components with 110 or 120 volts, you can slowly add voltage in and heat up these old components so the capacitors, for example, don't just pop.
At least if we do this slowly, if it starts giving off signs that there's a big problem.
Like flames.
Or smoke, or just a smell.
Yeah.
We don't irreparably damage.
Fry everything. Yeah. All right, so... old school plug right there. There's no big side or small side. You could plug it in any way you want. I'm going to plug it in the variac.
Variac all the way down to zero.
Variac to zero. Turning it on. Tap power.
Do we want to turn the front on too? That would probably help.
Yeah. Yep. Turn the TV on.
You're going to be on fire watch.
All right.
I'm just looking for...
You're looking for what?
No, that the pilot light
all right.
coming on.
Here we go.
Is it like 20 volts?
All right, we're at 10, 5, 15, and 20 volts. Nada?
Tell.
Hard to tell. And you're sure it's on? That sounds like on.
Yeah. There's a small light bulb behind this bezel, or behind the knob for the fine tuning. But right now it's going to be very, very dim, so... without pulling this off to see it directly, it's hard to tell.
What do you want? 40?
Give him another 10. We turn out the lights for a quick second just so I can...
I'm gonna hit that one.
What's the overheads? Nothing.
Nothing. All right. You see, we should go up a little more.
Nah, turn it back.
Nada. One more time. Nothing. I'm at 10. All right, going up to 30.
Yeah. 60? It's half voltage.
You wonder if it's that switch.
I was just thinking, you know.
All right, then go back up to... you about 80?
Usually around 80 volts is enough to start.
Yeah.
Seeing a bit of a raster in that.
All right. So.
Something's rotten in the state of Denmark. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yep.
What? Turn it down? Turn it off? Yeah, I can smell it in here. Okay, so it's on, so don't push that again.
Oh, yeah.
In my brain, trying to figure out why we have a smell when we have nothing else.
Yeah.
Or do you just want to open it now and fiddle with it? So last night, as you saw, the thing did not come on. We're in the dark, turning on and off, changing the voltage, not a heartbeat. So we called it a night, and we got in here this morning, and now Dan has opened it up, and he's going to diagnose this thing and see if we can figure out what caused it to not come on. But before we do that, I wanted to stop right here and get this magic moment, because you're never going to see this again. You're seeing... a predictive chassis coming out of the case for the very first time since it was in the factory and unmolested, untouched by other human hands other than the guys and gals who assembled it and manufactured it in the first place. So everything is in place the way it came from the factory. There's no real dust, no real dirt. Wires are placed the way they should be. And that's an important thing, right, Dan, to see how the wiring looms are and where each and every piece goes, because guys argue over that. So this is so clean. You're never going to see one like this again. So you've taken a few screws out and ready now to pull the...
Yep, undone the wires.
So. Yep, to pull the board out of there. All right,
Wow, look at that. It's great, Dan, that you've done this so many times and you knew exactly what unplugged where, and so that's why it came out so smoothly and quickly. And this is my favorite thing. This is what I call the no-no wire.
Yes. Now, this is the second anode.
Because this comes directly from the CRT, and even months later, it can still kill you, right?
It'll bite you, but it will highly unlikely it would kill you.
Well, it could have even a few days later still kill you.
It'll hurt.
Yeah, it hurt a lot. So yeah, you don't want to touch that.
It's 17,000 volts.
17,000 volts, but it's the amperage that kills you, right?
Correct.
All right,
and that's very low amperage.
Oh, okay. So it just hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me that the tubes are still bright and shiny. Just a little bit of teeny bit of dust on there, but not much.
Sure.
Yeah. People don't give tubes enough credit. These things are pretty tough, and if anything is wrong, it's probably not the tubes, right?
Yeah, I mean, tubes don't go bad just from sitting on a shelf.
Right.
Unless they've been, you know, hit or something happens where they lose the vacuum. But yeah, these should be as good as the day they were made.
I don't see anything that's burnt.
Nothing so wrong it shows.
Okay.
As the saying goes.
It's insanely clean.
All right. Yeah, and this is where the anode, that goes in there.
Yeah.
That is it. Matt, come get a shot of this. This is so crazy clean in here because it's
normally
hot.
Normally half of this wax coating is in a big puddle on the bottom because they got hot and it just melted part of it off of there.
Just great. So now it's time to diagnose, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Ah, perfect. Thank you.
Well, this is the underside of the chassis. And yesterday when we tried to power it up, we weren't getting anything. We didn't see the tubes lighting up, a little light bulb and the tuner didn't light up, nothing. So there's a break somewhere in the circuit for the filaments. It's all in series, so it's like Christmas lights. You pull one, everything goes. So you have this big resistor here that drops the voltage to a suitable level for the tubes to use. And you can see here, it's just loaded with cracks. This sand-like coating just crumbles over time. A lot of sets you see these replaced, but like there's a huge crack here. There's actually a chunk physically missing off of it down here. And when the chassis was flipped right side up, you could see all kinds of corrosion and stuff on the wires. Like right on here, these are all green, fuzzy, nasty stuff. I can't get a good resistance reading across this, so we're pretty certain that this is the culprit for why we're not getting power up. So we've got individual discrete components. We're going to replace that and give her another go.
What most people don't appreciate about this is that you never, ever, ever, ever find a television this age that looks like this. This looks pretty much brand new except for a couple of corrosion components. And you never find a predicted in this shape.
You don't have burn spots on the circuit board from overheating, things like that, like you commonly see. So this is a real treat to be able to look at one that's all pristine like this.
No corrosion at all.
Yep, no rust on anything.
And even simple things like seeing how the wires are wrapped and the routing of them, which again is unusual because of other service guys that have come in and done their thing.
Exactly. Well, shall we go forward?
Yeah.
All right.
Shit happens.
Yes, it does.
And that's going to be replaced with?
With these modern ceramic wire wound.
Three of them.
Yeah, because there was three sections to this. 17 ohm, 13 ohm, 8 ohm. Some of those numbers are kind of hard to find, so if you're one or two ohms different, it's not going to really make a lot of difference to it. Unless
what happens when I tell Dan that we're going to have a longer version, he can talk technically.
He turned me loose, so we're...
Unless we put a washer on the other side.
How long?
All right. Filed, cut perfect length. Still warm.
Beautiful.
You know, this is like killing me because I want to be doing this.
Swiss Army saves us again.
Hey.
I'm replacing a component. I mean, Dan was doing such a good job. I thought, you know, if it's my TV, I should at least do a little bit of the work. And capacitors are always what go here. So the other capacitors in here are the ones that could be problematic later, right?
Yeah. I mean, any of the
wax
paper, or the wax ones, or if the electrolytics have dried out.
Yep. But we're hoping for the best.
Yeah.
Where's the solder?
All right, there's one.
Hey.
I just got to remember, it's that terminal, number two.
It's the one going to the ground.
Got it. All right.
The cool thing is in the Philco manual, they actually have drawings of all the parts and then the wires going to the numbers on
the terminal. Yeah, it's not just a schematic, so it's kind of almost idiot-proof.
So if, nothing's foolproof to a talented fool, is this.
All right, you happy with that placement? It's a way for everybody.
Yep, and we're on the correct terminal. Oh, that should do it.
And there you have it. I think I'm qualified.
You are.
Yeah, thanks. On the helicopter, the first two helicopters I built, there was no wiring loom from the factory. You know, when you build a car or when you rebuild a car, you can buy the entire wiring loom with all the connectors, and then you just lay out the wiring loom, hook everything up. Nope. They just gave you this giant schematic for an aircraft, for a helicopter. And this is not for, you know, this. If it blows up, it's like, that didn't work. This is for flying and flying. So, yeah. And that was when I was 24 years old, I built my first one. All right, so, Dan, you've diagnosed everything. You replaced the one triple resistor, right?
Correct.
All right. And then I replaced the one capacitor. And from what you can see, you think this will all work?
What I can tell so far, yes.
All right. So what the typical technician would do, if we were smart, is you'd put everything back together with the chassis out.
Yes.
Plug everything in and make sure it all works, then put it back together.
Right.
Yeah. But that's not what we want to do. I want to be able to turn on this TV and see the picture come on. I am going to assume that, and I know what assume means, but I'm going to assume that that was the only thing wrong. I'm going to hope that that was the only thing wrong. Let's put it all back together, button it up as if it was just out of the box and see if it works. And if it doesn't, we take it apart again. Are you guys okay with that? Because it would be so anticlimactic to turn this on, the screen comes on, yay, it works, and then have to put it back together. That's what we should do, but that's not what I want to do. Are we okay with that?
It's your TV.
Okay.
The speaker wires, it doesn't matter which goes to which post.
Nope. All right. In a tin box. There it is right there. Couple of geeky features here. Do you know if I can have this? This chain is never ever here, right?
Most of the time.
No. Yeah. And that's just to keep this with this. The other is the wood grain, the fake painted wood grain, or again, the applique. And then this, which kills me, I love this, doesn't kill me, I hope, is this safety feature is when you take the back off, you cannot turn the set on. Right. Because reaching in these sets, depending on what you touch, should give you a big surprise. So this is the power cord that comes from the wall that goes to here, and you can't get power to this thing, and this cord does not come out. It's riveted in here, and it goes to right there and plugs in there. So you can't turn this television set on until this back is back on the TV. So then what everybody does, of course, is cut out these rivets and pull this cord out and then plug it in.
We're gonna put the shipping brace back in.
Let's do it. Shipping brace. Why not? You never see a shipping brace, right?
No. I mean, I saw this fastener. I wonder, where's that?
Yeah. So you've never seen one of those?
Never.
Blake, never you know.
Seven tongue resets had a brace on.
That's great. So it's basically just holding the chassis in place inside.
It's providing its support to the back end of the cabinet. So I think the only shipping brace left.
Cool. Where are the screws?
All right, gentlemen.
Where?
The moment of truth.
So what are the chances now, Jeff?
I have no idea. Just hoping for the best.
Easier way.
All right, so I think we're about ready to try this again. Okay, we've got the Variac hooked up again, the voltage regulator starting at zero. This needs to be set to channel 3 because that's what we're what our little converter is broadcasting on. All right, want to go to 30 volts?
Yeah.
I smelled the burning last night, so I'll stand right here and just want to get a fire extinguisher. There's one around here somewhere.
Well, actually, since we've had the knob off,
I see nothing.
Well, at this low voltage, I mean, you probably would start to see the pilot light go on more than anything, but give her a little more.
All right, I'm going to 45.
So did you push that on-off button once?
I did it twice.
Oh.
Do you want me to try it again?
No, I thought it was, so if you do it twice.
Okay. Ah.
Yeah? Pilot light?
Now I see a pilot light.
Yay. The first sign of life after 65 years.
It's already better than what we got yesterday.
Let me take a look.
Oh, yeah.
Ta-da. Great. Ready for some more?
Yep, I see filament.
Yeah, there's the red glowing tube orange.
Oh, I hear it.
I hear, okay, we have B plus. That's good because the amplifier tube is starting to conduct. Okay, give her another 10.
There's 70 volts.
You hear the high pitched whine of the flyback yet? Yeah, very high pitched.
There's 80 volts now. What?
90.
Hopefully by now we'll start seeing a picture.
Hopefully.
But I mean, in the audio side of it, it's all ceramic capacitors, and those never
go.
No.
So if we're not seeing anything yet, this is not a good sign, right?
For 100.
There was 100. Come on.
Come on, baby.
Yeah, look at that. All right. Sure. About a little more voltage.
Yeah.
Up to 110?
Yeah. I thought for a minute it was shrinking a bit, but...
Oh. Uh-oh. Turn it off?
Yeah.
Well, it was fun while it lasted.
B plus fuse might have went.
All right. So we got to open it up again.
Yeah, but...
but that was great.
We achieved, in my mind, what we were hoping. At least we could see something on here.
And hear it.
And, yeah. And,
you know, and it sounded great.
Yeah. The initial work we did... was the original problem why we weren't getting anything.
And what do you think happened there?
There's a fuse for the high voltage that supplies the tubes, and it's a resistor.
So it ages as well.
A fuse, and it can go apart. Yeah.
And how difficult is one of those to find?
I've got a drawer full of them at home.
Well, you're not at home, Dan.
Yeah, I know. They're not that hard to find.
But you can send me one.
Yep, I can do that.
All right. Blake, you happy?
Yeah, it was crazy to see. It was quite a sight for sure.
Yeah.
To see it work on that original stuff, even after Dan's light tinkering, it's a testament to the fact that it was stored well and kept clean like the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, I don't care what anybody says. I would call this a successful couple of days, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you guys traveled a long way with one purpose, and that was to open that box and see this predicted that no one's ever seen before. And we did, and then the bonus was that we actually got it on. Dan, you did a great job finding what was wrong with it. And even though we didn't get full screen, we had it for a few seconds, saw an image and heard it. It sounded great. So I look forward to you guys getting on a Zoom call with me and
We'll work on this one and I'll get it going. But these are all the predictors, and what a lot of magic. But this was the flagship model, and I can imagine how excited families were when they got this thing home.
Just as having to see the light of day out of that box was an experience.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But this is a beautiful piece, and what a piece of Americana. And but again, we'll do a little more work on it. You'll send me some parts, Dan. I'll get out my starting iron, do a little Zoom call, and make sure it comes back to life. Again, and this time, perfectly, I'm confident. So, you know, on SpongeBob, where they come back and they say, 2 months later.
2 months later.
Well, try 1 year later.
1 year later.
Yeah, it took me a year. But the reason it took a year is because I had two stand-up specials that got in the way, and it took me a year to finally get back to the TV to work on it. Dan very nicely sent me all the parts, literally FedExed them to me, and they just sat in the box a while because I had to work on the specials. I had so much more to do. But finally, a couple days ago, Blake and Dan got on the phone with me. I pulled all the parts out of the box that Dan had sent me and started going through what needed to be replaced. They coached me through it, and I worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And then the day ended, and I still wasn't even close to being finished. And so the next day, I thought, I am going to get this done. And that was yesterday. So I finally finished. I replaced all the parts you see right there, a bunch of capacitors, and there's a fuse that went out. But those were all the parts that Dan said needed to be replaced, and he was right. So we're going to get them on the iPad and show them what I did. This thing's amazing. It is new out of the box. New out of the box since 1957. And this is the first time anybody will have seen it work besides me. Hey, Blake and Dan, how are you guys?
Hey, Jeff.
You know, you guys left me the other night, and I promised I would finish it, but I wouldn't put it all back together again. We would turn it on together. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it anymore. The thing was just sitting there, and I'm like, no, I got to put it back together and make it work. So there it is right there.
Da-da-da-da.
So here we are, and I think it's time to fire it up to see if this thing actually works.
Yeah, the suspense is killing me.
Okay. Let's see what happens. I turned it on. We have a light. There's the light. It's on. All right. Let's see what happens. Usually takes like, what, 40 seconds? 30, 40 seconds? There it is. Oh, that beautiful snow. Now, see, the trouble is no one at home will be able to see the beauty that we see because you get the black and white rolling because the frame rates don't match up. They're not in sync. So what you're seeing at home, you're seeing this black and white roll. And what we're going to see here in a minute is an absolutely perfect picture. So you'll just have to believe us. So we're on channel 8 right now. We should be on channel 3. There we are. Oh, let's see if we can stop the roll there. Hold on, there it is.
Wow. Nice. Holy Toledo.
Oh, it actually looks pretty good on the iPhone. So the reason I use my own DVD is not for ego reasons, but for legal reasons, because I actually own that, so we won't get in trouble on YouTube for using somebody else's stuff. I wanted to put the Twilight Zone on, but we'd probably get dinged for it. So it sounds...
I'm just blown away by how good it looks. I mean, holy crap, it's just... it finally has the picture to match the exterior cosmetic beauty of the set.
And you can see every single scan line, nice and sharp.
Yeah, it really is. It's world class.
But what do you think of the picture? Did I do okay on that?
Yes, you did.
And people think it's just a matter of doing the bright and the vertical and the horizontal. No, there's those little secret settings inside there that you have to get to that you told me about, Dan, and both of you told me about those, and able to tweak the picture okay.
You hit a home run, Jeff. I mean, you've outdone yourself. It's phenomenal.
Well, thank you. Well, obviously, I couldn't have done it without you guys. And I know a lot of people are going to criticize this and go, oh, you shouldn't take out the original components. Well, if we hadn't, it wouldn't have worked.
It's really something to be said that you have that time capsule in operating condition to show people what would have been like if they would have bought it at brand new at the store, you know what I mean, from the Philco dealer.
Really great about this one is mine came with two remotes, but they're at school right now. But when they get home, I'll make them change the channel for me.
There you go.
All right. Well, again, gentlemen, thank you all very, very much. This has been just great fun. What a great adventure. I have learned a lot. That's what I love about this. Even, you know, at the age I am now, I still love learning new things and how to do stuff. And so this has been just great fun.
Jeff, we can't thank you enough. For
You're welcome. Thank
it's
you.
It's been a privilege.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
All right. We'll see you. So that was that. That was a heck of a lot of fun, and I'm not kidding. It was a lot of work, but man, I did. I learned a lot, and this is just amazing. What an amazing piece of Americana and a piece of history. In 1957, I guess, so many households had televisions, and then the sales started to slump after that because everybody who was going to get a TV had already bought one. But this thing came out at the peak of all of that, and what a beautiful example. So unique and so different. Nothing like it. So, there you go. We'll do something else fun next time.